Coming up, guest host Ayaz Akhtar and I on Google Plus's white space problem. Facebook email, is that even a thing? Spotify's internet takeover. Making money on YouTube even if nobody knows who you are yet. And who should buy Path? All that and Tumblr's the new blog on the Social Hour.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and guest host Ayaz Akhtar, episode 56, recorded Monday, April 16th, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/social hour. Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of The Social Hour. We're at episode 56. I'm Sarah Lane from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. And Amber is actually off this week, but we have a very special guest host who's joining me in studio, Ayaz Akhtar.
I wouldn't say I'm that special, but...
You are special.
Well, yeah, I'm special because I'm not on the show normally. I'm usually back there listening to the show.
That's right.
And catching up on everything. So it's kind of interesting to be on the show.
Yeah. Totally, it's interesting for me, too, because I've never actually had anybody on the Social Hour sitting next to me.
Okay. That's why...
We were back in the cottage, I think Tom did the show once. He filled in for Amber, but he Skyped in from home.
Well, I could Skype in from the desk if you want.
You could. But that would be silly.
That's silly.
Yeah, so it's nice. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah, no problem.
You usually are sitting over on the TNT set behind us prepping for this this afternoon show. So I said, will you please just do the Social Hour with me on Monday? You're going to be there anyway. It's not like you're doing anything between
and
11 and 12
and
Pacific.
For 2 hours, I said sure.
Yes, that's right. So thank you. We have a good show. A lot of stuff happened in the last week. In the world of social media. So we'll get into it and we'll get through as many stories as we can in an hour. The first story is Google Plus's big redesign. Now, this happened, midweek last week? So we've had a few days to play around with it. I think it was last Wednesday because I remember Leo getting all bent out of shape about the white space on This Week in Google.
That's right. There's a lot of white space that didn't have the centered thing anymore. Now everything's to the left, all the content. So there's some white space.
Yeah,
the
content
right
is
now.
Left aligned.
Yeah,
and so you got all this junk
flipping out about that. I don't really get why necessarily. I mean, even if you go into full screen mode, you'll see it looks worse. But I mean, it was one of the trending topics on the new Google Plus was white space, just everywhere.
You know, Tony Wang, who works with us, mentioned to me, well, you know, the white space is kind of nice. If you open up a chat conversation with somebody, then it's not overlapping anything. Maybe that's part of the reason. Oh, great. But that doesn't really work if you're at the top of the page. I mean, you're still overlapping a little bit. And obviously, once you get multiple chat windows going, it gets a little bit messy again. Now, Lifehacker actually posted an article. I think it actually came from, initially, they got it from GHacks. But it's a nice it's a Firefox or a Chrome plugin that you can toggle on and off to get rid of white space. So I said, okay, that's cool. All right, well, let's go ahead and I already have it installed, but let me go ahead and turn it on again.
You have a Chrome extension that will change the way Google Plus looks all the time. Is that what this thing does?
Well, it's supposed to get rid of white space, all right? So I've got white space remover from Google Plus. Let me go ahead and enable it. And I go back to Google Plus. And sure enough, as you can see, it did get rid of some stuff. But it didn't really get rid of empty space. Now there's just a little bit more gray space. And you've got a little bit more padding over here on the left-hand side. So I don't know if that's really solving any pressing issues. But for anybody who just really hates that white space, and you're using either Chrome or Firefox, it's at least worth installing. It's completely free to install the extension. You can toggle it on and off easily. Maybe you like this view better.
I've always been afraid of extensions that mess with Google Plus because Google changes the design so often that sometimes things break. Like when it first came out, I immediately got an extension to take away that little red notifier that says you have one message or seven messages or whatever.
You didn't like that.
Well, I would always click it. So I'd be in the middle of doing something for work, and there's this thing popping up. I'm like, I have to click it. I just couldn't stop clicking it. So I got the extension for that. But it broke something when Google changed something. Yeah. So I'm like, oh, okay, I have to remove this extension. So I'm kind of nervous about putting something like that in because Google's like, well, we'll redesign stuff whenever we want.
Yeah, I have the same issue. I used to be really, really extension happy. And there are still extensions that I definitely think help services. Google Plus, namely, you know, they just do stuff that Google Plus doesn't do natively. But you do run into the issue that anytime the service itself updates, the extensions tend to break. And if there's a developer on the case, then they can go ahead and update their extension too. But you have to have somebody that's paying attention.
Will this shut up everybody, you think? Will they get this extension and no one's going to complain about white space anymore? No. Or should there be another extension that fills the white space with something else, like kittens or something? It should be.
I don't know. I think people hate change as a rule. I can't imagine anybody saying Google Plus was better before, because it really is better now as far as design goes. You got a little white space. I don't know. It looks cleaner. It makes more sense. I like it a lot more, but I just think people don't like, once they get used to something and they're committed to going to somewhere like Google Plus on a daily basis, you're reading stuff from your friend, this and that. I don't know. People get, they get bent out of shape when things change. Now, speaking of things changing, there was an article on TechCrunch, I think it was last Friday. The headline was, Facebook one-ups Google with a kind of Facebook Plus. Your Facebook email timeline names are now linked up. And I read that and I was like, I don't even know what that means. Facebook email, what does that even mean? It turns out that what Facebook is going to be doing is, for anybody who hasn't already gotten a custom timeline name. So that's like facebook.com/Sarah Lane. That's one of the ones that I secured a while ago. Not everybody has that. But you can check the status of yours, by the way, if you go to facebook.com/username, just to see if there's something associated with yours. You probably already know. If you've already associated a name, then you know what I'm talking about. But the idea is that Facebook has posted that they are, this is a service that's going to be rolling out, so it's not necessarily live. It's not live for me yet. It's probably not live for you, unless you're lucky. But they say, this is as of last Thursday, starting today, we're updating addresses on Facebook to make them consistent across our site. Now, the address people use to get to your timeline and send you email on Facebook will be the same. So it's not like SarahLane@Facebook.com. It would be facebook.com/Sarah Lane would be a way to send me email via Facebook.
I thought everybody who is on Facebook gets a Facebook email address. And so this is the address you get. It would be, for mine, it would just be my name at Facebook. Isn't that the way it would work?
I don't know.
Because I was reading this, and I'm thinking, because you can change what name you have up there. You can have a different vanity URL.
Right.
So maybe that's a nice way to tie everything together. I was confused by it, too. I had to read this like 2 or 3 times. And I think it works with whatever your vanity URL is. Mine is just iasactar. You would just use that, iasactar at Facebook.
I assume that Facebook's going to, there's going to have to be some sort of redesign in the timeline itself. I mean, I know where my Facebook messages are. Mm-hmm. I guess emails would also get dumped into that same area, because you don't, when I go to Facebook, there isn't a place to check my Facebook email.
Do you ever use that Facebook email address? Because I don't.
No.
Like, you just send a message.
I didn't even know there was one.
You just send a message through Facebook Messenger or their actual messages app. There's no real need to go, oh, I'm going to go into Gmail and I'm going to send an email to you right now to your Facebook address. Why wouldn't I just send you an email that I already have?
Yeah, just go into Facebook. I'm not sure. I guess if Facebook says, listen, some people just feel more comfortable with an email way of doing things, why not just give them the option? It just seems a little bit, I don't know, 5 years ago, to roll out this kind of feature, like, now Facebook emails will match your timeline. And people are like, wait, what? Aren't I on Facebook, so I'm not using email? Isn't that sort of
the
point?
Just reminded me again of the it's nice to have the vanity URL, and you don't have that on Google Plus. Like, you have that horrible, like, number. What's mine? 10208817. It just keeps going. Like, that's not a good idea. I'm surprised that Google doesn't have that yet. I mean,
yeah,
you
agree.
Should be able to do that.
Well, I guess for Google, because it's like I have a Gmail account. I secured Sarah Lane way back in the day because I was, you know, the first Sarah Lane that cared when the service rolled out. And it would be nice if it was plus.google.com/Sarah Lane or something like that. But yeah, that doesn't work. Let's go to my profile page on Google Plus. It's, yeah, plus.google.com/1115. I mean, that's nothing that anyone would ever be able to. I certainly can't memorize that. You wouldn't be able to either.
No.
Doesn't really make any sense. I guess the whole point is, oh, you know, you search for Sarah Lane and I pop up and it's as easy as that. That's sort of the Google way to think about doing it. But Facebook is definitely one-upping them with these nice, easy vanity domains. So.
I'm trying to send myself an email. I finally got it. Okay.
So where did it go?
Okay, it goes into, I don't even know which one this is. This is in Messages. It goes into Messages, and it shows up that way. So it's just like as if somebody sent you a Facebook message. Okay, so it is slash whatever it is. So if you have the vanity URL, mine is is.actar, actually.
Uh-huh.
So I sent an email to that address at facebook.com, and it shows up in Messages. So that's going to be tied together. So with your timeline name. So if you changed it to anything else, let's say you didn't want slash Sarah Lane. You wanted something like catlover73 or something.
Right.
You could actually have that email address. You could go, oh, what's your email address? Just, it's right up there. Real easy. I guess that's neat. I don't know if it's one up in Google Plus at all, but
I don't know. I sometimes feel like a lot of the headlines these days are a stretch to compare the two.
Oh yeah.
And they're similar in certain ways, certainly, but I don't really see this as being some sort of a crazy Facebook fires back at Google Plus's new redesign. It's not much of a redesign at all. It's more of just an easy way to get to somebody that you're a fan of on Facebook. So that's Google. That's Facebook. Moving on now to a service that works very well with Facebook, and that's Spotify. Spotify wants to move beyond Facebook, though, as far as discovery goes. We talked about this a little bit last week on Tech News Today, the idea that Spotify knows that a lot of, you know, they have a lot of users, certainly, but a lot more people just don't have a Spotify account, don't really quite understand why they would need Spotify, don't understand that you can use Spotify for free, not via mobile, but certainly via the desktop app. So Spotify wants to make it easier than ever to be able to embed songs or links to songs on your blog, on your website, that sort of thing, so that if Ayaz was not familiar with Spotify, I might embed a song on my Tumblr page, like I've done here, which is looks really nice. This is a song that I like from a new album, and if Ayaz went to my Tumblr site and pressed play, well, they would force him to launch Spotify. So this is where it's a little bit weird, because if Ayaz doesn't have Spotify launched already, it's going to, and you get this error message, which is strange. I wonder why they won't fix that, considering that the song does play. I don't actually want to play the song right now. But the idea is that I've got this song embedded on my site. Ayaz is a fan of mine. He wants to know what I'm listening to. So Spotify says, yeah, we'll let you just stream the whole song. It's not a 30-second clip. It's not annoying the way, you know, that happens with iTunes. But you have to have Spotify installed. If you don't have it installed, we'll send you a prompt to install it for free. If you do have it installed but it's not already open, as you can see, it's kind of this cumbersome Windows opening, then it opens in the background. The idea behind that, of course, is Spotify is not in the business of letting you embed Spotify songs on your website without actually going through their player.
Mm-hmm. So I tried this out. I thought it looked like Grooveshark. Grooveshark had this kind of thing. But obviously their music selection wasn't as I guess, legal as what was going on with Spotify. Mm-hmm. This just seems so crazily cumbersome that unless Spotify, this is what I would imagine, Spotify is going to update their app. It's going to auto-start when you start your computer, I bet. It's going to be like logged in. So that way you always have it running in the background. Either it's going to be a little menu item or it's going to be in your system tray.
Yeah.
Because like the way iTunes does this, it starts up with iTunes Helper. That's always there. So I would imagine that Spotify is going to change their app so that this is always there, because that's a really strange experience when you click play and something flashes at you and then you see an app open up and then it takes over your window. So you're not even back to the browser.
Right.
And oddly enough, the play pause controls work on both the app and the web page to control the same song. So I thought that was just like very strange. I don't see how that's really making it easier. If Spotify had like a web component, I could see that being a lot neater, like Mog or RDO. They have the web stuff, so why not have a web version of this instead of there's the All Things Deep track that they embedded.
Nice test.
Yeah,
that Total was Body test. Workout by Arnold Schwarzenegger. Well, but then again, you know, when you're searching for a song or an app, I mean, iTunes sometimes will open where I'm just like, oh God, I don't want to go to iTunes right now. But I'm fairly used to that already. not that it's a good experience.
Yeah, I was going to say, used to it doesn't mean a good thing.
No, that's certainly true. But it's not as if I'm like, wow, Spotify, you're creating this behavior that I can't deal with because I kind of understand why it's happening. They obviously want, you know, a very small percentage of people who click on my track and don't have Spotify installed will then install it. Most people will just be like, I don't want whatever's going on here. I'm just going to move beyond this experience. But the few people, you know, out of however many thousand people might see this post, if a few hundred people end up downloading Spotify, it's worth it for them in the interim.
It just seems like it's one of those things, if you're going to do it, you're going to embed these songs, you should put a warning that this is going to happen because people might freak out, why is this happening? Like, I know every time I see a PDF link, nowadays people write really large next to it in, like, bold text, PDF warning, because it's going to open up. I mean, things have gotten a little cleaner with Chrome that way, but I could imagine somebody easily getting confused. Why is this stuff opening up?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you have no interest in Spotify and don't even know what streaming music is, and it's just like, no, stop. It probably seems like some sort of like a pop-up, like malware type thing. So that's Spotify. I actually don't use Spotify regularly, but I am really interested in the streaming music space and where it's all going. So I think that they're moving in the right direction, but yes, it seems to be some sort of like a band-aid solution for trying to get more people to sign up for the service. Speaking of people signing up for services, YouTube has made it easier to make money off of videos that you upload to the service, whether they're popular or not. The partner program is something that some people have been able to be a part of for some time now, but there were limitations as far as who got to be an official YouTube partner, as limitations like how many views your videos got, how many subscribers you had to your channel, that sort of thing. So it was kind of like if you had proven yourself, like an iJustine, for example, always comes to mind as like one of the most popular YouTube channels. But there are a lot of people who, you know, have a lot of views regularly and have a lot of people that are following them. Those are the sorts of folks who would become YouTube partners because YouTube says, well, obviously you're getting a lot of eyeballs. We want you to become a partner. We want to run ads on your videos. And then, you know, we split the share, however they end up splitting it. Now YouTube says, we'll let anybody try to monetize their videos. You don't have to have really any audience at all. You're not going to make that much money if you don't have much of an audience, but we're not going to keep you from trying.
Yeah, there are other video sites like this. I mean, Blip.tv is what I used to use a lot, and they had a revenue program right from the beginning. So it didn't matter that I was getting like 6 views. Right. I mean, there's a certain point where like, you've earned 2 cents. But yeah, you understand you're not getting paid a lot. But if you want to use YouTube, this is just another attractive feature for this, because I know that one of the reasons I shied away from YouTube was the whole partner program, because that was something you had to have certain numbers, you had to be a certain somebody and have status to do it. And I noticed that they were rolling it out a lot more, because even on my private YouTube, that little banner would show up saying, oh, you can monetize your videos. Mm-hmm. And on that video, on that particular channel, I only have videos of like my office and showing how messy it is.
Right.
So it's not like I'm making a ton of money on that, and that's not something I ever plan to monetize, but it's just another thing for YouTube to say, yeah, we do that too. You can have money and use YouTube, because I mean that's almost ubiquitous. You'll see it. Everyone wants to upload to YouTube, and they put that player in. You're so used to it at this point.
Yeah, it sounds like at least right now some of the limitations will remain, such as uploading your own custom banner to your YouTube subscriber. You know, your account page. Basically, you'll notice that on YouTube, some people have this like really cool customized YouTube page where it's clearly a YouTube account, but you've got this nice custom branding, it looks really good, that sort of thing. Sounds like YouTube isn't necessarily ready to let everybody do that. They probably have to make sure that they have restrictions in place so that there's some consistency with a bunch of people uploading a bunch of banners or cover photos or whatever they're called these days. But I think it's moving in the right direction. Hey, you know, if you want to make money, if you're dedicated, if you're going to spend time uploading videos to YouTube, that was always my problem, is like, I mean, when I'm not at Twit, I love the idea of uploading a video here and there, but I can't commit to anything too regular. So I wasn't a good candidate for a partner program, because they want people who are consistent, who aren't just going to get sick of it after 2 weeks and never upload again.
Yeah, I find myself using YouTube much more because of like the iDevices that have built-in send to YouTube. I'm like, well, yeah, and that way I don't have to get the file off whatever it is, the iPad, put it on a computer, then upload it, just direct. And so it's one of the only default options you get, I think. So it's kind of nice. You can make some money on it.
Absolutely. All right, moving on to the Valley Bubble, or what some people are calling the ever-increasing Valley Bubble, because everybody's throwing money at everybody else. The latest story is a $40 million funding round for a little app called Path. Now, as you and I both use Path, we're Path friends, mm-hmm. And I know you like it because it's more of like a restrictive sharing mechanism.
Yeah.
It's not so much of a public, here's what I'm eating, everybody. It's here's what I'm eating my 50 friends who might care about this sort of thing.
Yeah, the most of my fear with Twitter is like, okay, now I'm going to spam people with these ridiculous things. I know yeah. I don't want to see people's Facebook feeds of, and I'm going to sound horrible now when it's all, look, your kid did something, that's great, that's fantastic. But I haven't talked to you in 6 years, and I don't know what's going on, and this is all you talk about. At least on Path, I see people doing a lot more things. They're willing to share things that they probably wouldn't on Twitter or Facebook. They're saying things like political stuff that you would never see up there. You'd see like just a whole bunch of content that seems like it's freer a bit. You know, and you have this lack of misunderstanding with the group. That's the other thing. You can make a horrible joke on Path, and if these people really know you, everything's fine.
Oh,
versus
yeah.
misunderstandings everywhere else.
On Twitter, just this morning, great example of the, like, I can't say anything on Twitter without being misunderstood by at least half of the people. Ryan Block, who works at Gadget, GDGT, friend of mine, posted something like, oh, it's amazing where how many emails we get from people who consider it that we're, you know, snubbing a certain product just because we haven't given it an official rating yet on our site. They're in the business of rating gadgets. And so I wrote back in jest, yeah, why haven't you rated this obscure home theater system I'm thinking about buying? What bias? That's a joke.
Yeah.
You know, I'm being sarcastic. And somebody else wrote back to me very nicely and said, yeah, you know, I'm thinking of buying some theater speakers too. Which ones are you looking at? So I kind of had to laugh like, no, you don't really think that I meant what I said. Ah, now I have to explain myself.
Yeah. And if it's on Twitter, it's like another 15 tweets because it's really limited. You're like, right. That was a joke. I'm sorry. I was looking to this.
Yeah, and, I'm not really that big of a jerk. You have to read my sarcasm. I was being facetious. So Path is, you know, it's good for us for a lot of reasons. I'm a big fan of Path. Took me a while to get into it, but I am a convert. And a lot of other people are too. They say as of February, CEO Dave Morin says they've got 2 million users. $40 million funding round puts them at a valuation of roughly $250 million. Okay. Path and Instagram are compared right and left. And they're not really the same kind of network at all. Instagram is purely photos, and it's public. Path is photos, check-ins, listening to music, just thoughts. It's all sorts of updates, and it's a closed network. So it's apples and oranges, but they are compared quite a bit. People say, well, Instagram has, what, 50 million users?
I think something like that. After they went to Android, I think they're up to 40, maybe 50
yeah,
now.
They're on the way to 50 after they opened up to Android. Path is on Android too as well. I think on BlackBerry too. I think they have a BlackBerry app. So, you know, you say 2 million for Path. Well, that's just, I mean, that chump change compared to Instagram's huge, huge network. But it's sort of like 250 million valuation for 2 million users. $1 billion for 50 million users. I mean, it's not, it sort of seems like the right incremental growth.
Well, actually, I think that they were $1 billion when they only had 30 million, only 30 million.
Right, right? Yeah.
So, I mean, the thing is, I'm just kind of curious if what Path's going to get bought, is that what everyone's going to say now? Like, Google's going to buy them? I mean, who's left to buy?
Yeah, who's going to buy Path? If I had to choose, I'd say Apple should buy Path.
Why would they?
Now, the reason I say that is because Apple just doesn't have any sort of, like, their social presence is nil. It just doesn't, there is really just isn't
there's
any.
There's Ping.
Yeah, you know, that's like Ping is like the easy social experiment that we can laugh at. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I get the sense that Apple never really, like, made much of an effort. Like, Ping is there, but they didn't care enough to make it good. And so they don't really care that people don't like it that much. It's just sort of sitting around. Something like Path seems like, I don't know. It just seems like a good acquisition by Apple. And maybe that's just because I find it, it works well, it's well-designed, it seems very Apple-y. But then again, what does Apple need with something like this?
Yeah, I couldn't see them wanting to manage that. I mean, the amount of trouble the App Store itself got them in. There's comments on there when for reviews they have to keep policing. They have to police the apps themselves. Now, if they're in charge of your private data in a network, mm-hmm. people are always paranoid anyway, let alone, I mean, they have your contact information. Now, if it's Path, if they own Path, I could just see people just getting really up in arms, including all the Android users of Path, because they'd be like, I can't believe Apple uses this product, this, or they own this, and it'll turn off a bunch of people. And you're right, there is a beta of Path on BlackBerry. I looked it up. I was like, why would they service that audience? Because it just doesn't seem like the hardware is there for that.
Yeah.
Because, like, you're sharing photos and your location. I guess it does happen.
Appreciated, though, and thorough. A lot of other apps don't go that extra mile. You were mentioning before the show that there's some rumors that before Instagram sold to Facebook, which by all accounts sounds like, I mean, the deal went down pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And it was a Mark Zuckerberg, I'll pay whatever I want for this, and you're going to can't say no because I'm going to give you $1 billion. The Twitter might have been interested in Instagram. Kevin Systrom, CEO of Instagram, was an intern for Jack Dorsey, who's CEO of Twitter, obviously, and Square as well. So it's that kind of makes sense. I mean, who knows? Maybe they had a conversation about it. Maybe they were serious. Something like Path be a good acquisition?
For Twitter?
Yeah.
That sounds about right. They basically got burned on not getting Instagram. That app would have worked a lot better with Twitter, I think, actually, because it's this kind of quick sharing. It's like, here's a photo. Here you go. Makes a lot of sense. Path would be a direction of, like, kind of broadening the scope of Twitter, because Twitter's got short messages, and that's pretty much it. They just add, like, inline videos, and you can do certain things and see, like, replies and things. But I would just imagine they would just keep Path completely separate. Do you think they would keep them separate?
Well, I think they'd have to at first, because the whole idea of Twitter is public. You can have a lockdown Twitter mm-hmm. account. But I see less and less of those these days. And I don't think Twitter, you know, it's not in Twitter's best interest to have a bunch of people with private accounts, because that sort of breaks mm-hmm. the threading. There are sometimes, like, if you reply to somebody and, you know, if I don't follow them, then I wouldn't see that in my feed. But if I go to your account, your profile page, and I see that you've replied to somebody, and it seems like I'd like to know what that initial question was, and then it just goes to, like, a lockdown page because the user mm-hmm. you're replying to is private. Well, that's not a very good experience for me. It's their prerogative to have a private account, but something like Path could maybe be the next logical step for people who aren't ready to be public all out there on Twitter, but maybe want to have a good conversation, sharing a lot of different data and media with a group of their 150 closest friends.
Well, as long as if Twitter does buy it, I hope they keep it completely separate and never touch it, because they bought TweetDeck. I used to love TweetDeck, and they destroyed it. Like, it is awful now. I don't know why they do this.
Did they destroy it, or did they just let it languish and stop updating it?
Oh, no, they came out with a new version, and it was awful.
Really?
They're like, you know all the features you really liked when you're like a power user, you wanted to have all this information up? No, we're going to cut it down to three things. We're going to consolidate everything for you, and every old data you had, we threw that out. You get to start over now. And I have no idea why that happened, because that seems like a really bad user experience. Like, oh, yeah, you had everything set up. When we upgrade you, nothing will be the same. Even, like, I had, like five columns or something like that. And they're like, no, now you have three. You're going to have to rebuild everything.
I mean, does it seem like Twitter just bought TweetDeck in order to force people to use Twitter's native products?
Possibly.
You know? It's like, let's just screw up TweetDeck so that people stop loving it, and then maybe they'll downloading Twitter for Mac or something like that.
I mean, their apps themselves, they bought, right? Like, they didn't, their own official app is something that was another company's.
Yeah, it used to be Tweety.
Yeah,
right?
And it's like, we'll buy that. And the version on Android is a different one. The version on iPad is different because they just bought a bunch of little companies.
Right.
So I'm just, I really hope if they do touch this, they just put it over there.
Leave Path alone!
Please.
But pay a pretty penny for it, or at least the Path employees might be saying. Quick reminder that if you're watching us live, you know when we record the Social Hour. It's Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. But if you aren't watching us live, don't worry. You can go to twit.tv/TSH, and that's where you can find all of our episodes. They live in perpetuity and in infamy. So episode 55 last week, that was a fun episode because as I arrived at the studio, Ayaz, actually, who was in the studio, said, hey, guess what? Facebook bought Instagram for $1 billion. This is last week's episode. Not only do we have all of the links to everything that we talked about, which can be very handy. You don't want to write stuff down. Or maybe you're in the car and you're listening to us and you want to go back and look at the rad or fad that we picked for the week. All that stuff is there. Plus, helpful, handy links to subscribe to the show. Subscribing is of course, completely free. We have two video feeds. We have a nice large video feed and then a mobile one. It's good for your smaller devices, plus an audio feed. So if you can't watch, we prefer that you watch, of course, because we're showing off a lot of stuff. But if you can't, that's cool, too. Whatever you choose, again, that's twit.tv/TSH to watch all of our past episodes, get caught up, or subscribe. And you can always email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv about anything that we talk about on the show. Questions, comments, ideas for future topics. Maybe there's a service you really like or you hate. All that stuff. It's fair game. Got so much more news on the show, but first, let's take a moment to thank the folks at Audible for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. I was talking about people who can't watch the show, but maybe want to listen. These are the same kind of people who need Audible in their lives. So for me, I do a lot of commuting. I don't live anywhere near the Twit studio. I've got about a 45 to 50 minute commute each way, 5 days a week. And I need stuff to keep me busy while I'm held hostage in my car. I've got to be driving, so I can't be looking down anywhere. Audiobooks, that keeps me sane. Seriously, it is the best way to actually feel like I'm reading novels. I'm up on, you know, the newest book about Steve Jobs or Google or, you know, there's all sorts of nonfiction plus fiction books at my disposal with audible.com. In fact, they have over 100,000 titles. That's a lot. I mean, that's more books than you could ever possibly get through. What's nice about it is that you can go to audible.com and if you've got something that you want to search for or you just want to browse through audiobooks, it gives you a really good idea of the stuff that is on offer at Audible. They have nice, helpful categories. Even length, you know, if you want a book that you're going to get through in less than an hour, maybe you're going on a trip or something like that. They'll even categorize them in a way that's helpful for that. We've got memoirs. You have, you know, books in a variety of languages. It is great. And there's something about audiobooks. Leo and I were talking about this last week. It's like, what is it about audiobooks that forces your imagination to work in a different way? There's something because you can kind of get lost in your thoughts while you're doing something else at the same time. I mean, of course, you could sit there with your eyes closed, but you could be making dinner, listening to your book. You could be on a walk. You could be at the gym. You could be in your car, that sort of stuff. So it's really a great way to say, you know, I am the kind of person who reads a lot of books, even if you don't actually have a lot of time to sit down and read a book at the end of the day. I know that I don't. audiblepodcast.com/socialhour is the URL to use if you want to try out Audible, because if you sign up for an account, you get a free audiobook of your choice. Yeah. And then after that, if you love it, you can sign up for a monthly service. It'll actually sign you up automatically. I think the gold pass is about a book a month. And if you don't like it, you can stop at any time. But hey, why not get a free book just for signing up? Giving it a try. audiblepodcast.com/socialhour is the URL to use to get that free book and let Audible know that you came through us. So thanks to audible.com for sponsoring us. And again, get that free book. It is good stuff. I'm still trying to get up the nerve to start listening to Game of Thrones on audiobooks.
Isn't that going to be like 1,000 hours or so?
Yeah. Well, they're still, I mean, the books are still being written, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know where the end is. The horizon is not in sight yet. But a friend of mine said, oh, Sarah, you've got, because I'm a really big fan of the show now, you've got to listen to audiobooks. They are awesome. Because everyone who reads the books, with the exception of Tom Merritt, you know, because he's got special talents, goes, these books are really, I mean, they're as difficult as the show to try to figure out who's who. Very intricate. There's a lot of like family tree stuff going on, but people seem to love the audiobook. So that's my next frontier. Moving on to more stories in the show. This is actually a nice thing that TripAdvisor has rolled out. TripAdvisor, of course, is the website. Great SEO. When you're thinking about taking a vacation, maybe you're interested in a certain hotel or a certain, resort on an island somewhere. And you do a Google search, let's say, for Mallorca Island getaway, that sort of thing. Very often, a TripAdvisor page will show up with a bunch of ratings from TripAdvisor users. that range from like greatest hotel ever to didn't like this hotel for this and this reason. TripAdvisor, very popular. I've been using it for years. It's almost like a little bit like a Yelp type of a thing, but much more focused on trips themselves rather than restaurants and services and things like that. The problem with TripAdvisor, and this is true for, you know, any time where you're reading anonymous reviews by people, is that they're anonymous reviews by people. Well, they're not anonymous, but they're people that you don't know. And they're people that you might have very little in common with. Somebody who doesn't like a certain hotel on an island because the music was too loud, maybe that wouldn't bother me, kind of thing.
And then there's the practice of astroturfing where companies will pay other people to put up good reviews, and you don't know what's really great about this stuff, and you'll see this, you know, glowing review, and you're like, well, I don't know who this person is. It's hard to trust some of these things. That's why, like, you have to look at the aggregate, and you're still kind of wishy-washy. And like, well, do I trust the masses or not?
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of reading between the lines. When you read a review, you're like, too glowing. Mm-hmm. What's up?
When you look for the worst one, you're like, okay, well, wait, this person hated everything about this. Now you got to look for the 3-star ones, and you're hoping.
Yeah.
You're hoping somebody trustworthy's in there.
So TripAdvisor decided to do something that's going to help Ayaz and me cut through the BS, let's just say. And what it's going to do is let me see what my Facebook friends have rated on TripAdvisor. So it's not just drilling down to only my Facebook friends, but it's allowing me to filter through Facebook friends' activity. Again, it's a lot like what Yelp does, although Yelp wants you to sign up with a Yelp account. But I'm much more inclined to say, oh, Ron Richards, because he's one of my Yelp friends and he rates a lot of stuff. Ron Richards loves this restaurant. Well, I love him, so I'm probably going to like this place because he and I have a lot in common, that sort of thing. This works well on TripAdvisor as well. My friend Hunter rated the Old Bank Hotel in Oxford, in England. So the next time I'm in the neighborhood, well, I think Hunter has great taste. He and I enjoy a lot of the same things, so I'm much more inclined to believe him. And then I can also, you know, call him up and say, hey, you know, you really like this hotel. I saw on TripAdvisor, that sort of thing. So it's trying to keep a little bit of that anonymity and trying to figure out who's real, who's going to be somebody on TripAdvisor that I'm going to trust, and what their motivation is for leaving a review.
Yeah, I mean, I love this because that way I know who's leaving the reviews. You know people's opinions and the way they... You know, certain friends say phrase things certain ways, and if you see their review on there, it'll help you out a lot, because I know that this is what I wanted. I wanted to find a way to have a trusted source, and I don't want to run through the 5-star, 1-star stuff. Ask my friends this way.
Yeah. So it makes sense. TripAdvisor, good work. Now you just need a site redesign. That's the next step. That's the next big step for you. Postagram. Are you familiar with Postagram, Ayaz?
Not until today.
All right. So a company called Sincerely. Leo and I actually talked about Sincerely on iPad Today, the latest episode of iPad Today, which actually, is it out yet? Yeah, it is actually. We recorded an episode early, so I'm a little confused as to how up to date all of you are. But Sincerely is a company that has a bunch of cool services, and one of them is Postagram. What Postagram does is it allows me to, let's say I took a picture on Instagram of, you know, my coffee, and maybe Ayaz and I have an inside joke about that or whatever. I can send a physical postcard to you through snail mail that's a picture of the Instagram picture that I took. Now, okay. The coffee is sort of a dumb example, but maybe it was, you know, if we're at grandma's house and it's something that I know that you'd appreciate. Good for kind of just the novelty of getting a postcard, but also good for people who aren't going to be looking at my Instagram feed. Certain family members or friends that just aren't hip to the apps, that sort of thing. So that's what Postagram does. But once you get a Postagram, let's say you get something in the mail from me, well, what do you do with it? You might be like, oh, this is really cool. So what do? You take a picture of it.
I've done that so often, taking pictures of things that are pictures. So I could scan it, I guess. But
yeah, because all of a sudden you've got this physical thing, and it's like, well, you want to make a digital again, mm-hmm. so that you can share this cool thing that you got in the mail, which is, I mean, it's... You can do that, but it's a little cumbersome. What Postagram has done is they've added little QR codes to the postcards themselves. So you get this postcard from me. Instead of taking a somewhat awkward picture and trying to frame it up, whatever, you just scan that QR code, and all of a sudden now you have a digital version of the postcard that you got that then you can share online, whether it's with me saying like, hey, I got this, cool, yay, or share with other people, look what Sarah sent me in the mail. They don't actually call it a QR code because the people at Sincerely that make Postagram are smart enough to know that a lot of people getting postcards don't understand what QR is yet. Mm-hmm. So they call it like the stamp.
Right, because they actually have a little, it looks like a stamp around it. Yeah. QR, quick response code's not something a lot of people know about. But I mean, it's when those apps are smart enough to actually look at the actual QR code and get it for you, that's nice. When I saw this, I'm like, I wish this was like on birthday cards and things, because mm-hmm. I don't like keeping them around. They're just clutter. But I mean, there's a sentimental thing. I'm like, well, can I just like take a picture of it? This makes it a little neater. You don't have to take a picture and frame it nicely. Just keep that little, take that picture of the QR code and toss out the
paper. That is such a good idea. I have the same problem that you do because... Or like holiday mm-hmm. greetings, that sort of stuff. It's like, I never feel right about throwing it away. But I mean, I can't just have shoeboxes full of birthday cards and holiday cards and birth announcements and all that stuff because, you know, I'd run out of closet space.
Yeah, it's just, it's that fine line of sentimental, but this makes it a little easier to get rid of the paper. You're like, well, I saved it. I have it. I absolutely have it.
Yeah.
It's just, it's perfect right here.
So that's smart of Postagram. It does somewhat feel a little bit silly where it's like, picture starts digital, mm-hmm. becomes physical media, then goes back to digital so that physical media person can share with digital person that physical media was received.
Well, it could be like a family gathering or something. Oh, what's that? Oh, I saw that. Oh, your grandma sent me that. Oh, great. But I'm not friends with your grandma.
Right.
I'll just take a QR of that and have it for myself. It's kind of a neat, like, other way to get this stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Spotlight on StumbleUpon. We talk about StumbleUpon on the Social Hour constantly, and that's because they're always, I don't know, it seems like one step ahead of a lot of the other social networks. Now, if you log into StumbleUpon, you can choose to share via Facebook because StumbleUpon has teamed up with Facebook to be part of your timeline, if you so desire. Of course, timeline is what has made Spotify so popular within Facebook because I can choose, well, not just Spotify, but that's a good example of a very, very good use case of timeline apps where if I'm listening to a bunch of music over a period of a day, I, as is seen in his right-hand rail in the real-time feed, what I'm listening to and is likely to then click on one of my updates, like, what is this song that Sarah's listening to on Spotify? Then you go to the Spotify app, then you're likely to download the app, everybody's happy. Same thing with StumbleUpon. Let's say that I am a stumbler, and many of you are. You know, you're using StumbleUpon constantly throughout the day, and your activity is something that you would like to be sharing with your friends because it's something that you're actively engaged in and you're spending a lot of time curating how StumbleUpon works for you. You can now send that through Facebook and be sharing that data with your social circle on Facebook. Facebook announced that timeline apps were going to be integrated, I guess back in January was when they started allowing them. About a month ago, so mid-March, I think there are about 3,000 timeline apps. So there are quite a few. Some have better traction than others. But StumbleUpon has a really big user base. They're kind of one of those OG networks that have kept on trucking as newer services have been introduced over the years. So this makes sense to me.
Does it automatically post on your timeline, or do you have to like do an active step each time you want to share? Because Spotify just kind of just goes.
Yeah, no, it's if you choose to link up StumbleUpon to share to your timeline, it'll just go until you decide to disengage.
Okay, so that's...
Just like any timeline app. I mean, the whole idea is to, you know, take the step, that extra step out of the process of updating Facebook.
Back when I used to use StumbleUpon, I would always find the weirdest stuff because I don't know what was coming next. I just keep hitting the button just randomly.
Right.
I don't know if I want that shared all the time. Mm. I mean, I guess I could log out and stuff. I mean, I know I can always protect myself, but I'm just wondering how many people would be embarrassed by what they're stumbling upon.
Then again, and I haven't installed this yet, but maybe you can toggle it to only share with your timeline stumbles that you thumbs up.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Like, this is a really cool page. I want everyone to know what I found randomly on the internet.
That's exactly why I didn't link up. I was early enough on Spotify to not have to be on Facebook for it, and I was so nervous because the stuff I listen to, I don't want published up there. Because it's just too silly.
Yeah.
It's like, why are you listening to Johnny Cash today? It's like, are you in a mood? It's like, no.
There's no shame in some Cash.
Well, there's shame in other stuff in my playlist.
I know what you mean. I 80s pop. Every once in a while I will I'll be listening to something on RDO, and that is I have RDO set to post to my timeline automatically. And for the most part it's like, hey, I'm listening to what I'm listening to, but someone will ping me about something silly that, you know, you were really listening to that Fergie song? It's like, yeah, I really was.
Well, she can spell in every song. Well, she does.
Thank goodness. All I have to say is thank goodness Pandora is not yet able to post.
Oh, that was social.
On maybe. Facebook, because, yeah, I listen to, like, my George Michael station, which is great for certain people. But other people are going to think I'm absolute Looney Tunes for the stuff that I listen to.
Well, we won't even talk about my Kesha station, then. Not at all.
Let's not. The Pinterest Minute is something that I just made up because Pinterest is such a big deal right now. And anybody who watches the show regularly knows that Amber and I continually scratch our heads a little bit at why Pinterest is such a big deal. Hey, it's a great service. Nothing wrong with Pinterest, but it has enjoyed just absolute skyrocketed growth, even over the last few months, like exponential crazy growth with no signs of slowage. And they're making it even easier to share different kinds of videos because Pinterest has rolled out Vimeo integration. So this is something that was already available via YouTube. You could pin a YouTube video and it would show up in your Pinterest page on your wall. But Vimeo is now part of the group. So this is great for anybody who's spending a lot of time on Vimeo. And I also feel like Vimeo to me is like less amateur, more of
video file kind of people who like to make videos.
Yeah, a lot of pro stuff, a lot more creative experimentation. And I'm really generalizing because I know that there are a lot of professional creative people who are doing awesome stuff and posting it to YouTube. Probably, if they're smart, they're posting it both places. But Vimeo has always been, kind of like where you see a lot of really just another level in professional video. So it makes perfect sense that they're now integrated with Pinterest so that people can share more Vimeo videos than ever. Do you use Vimeo?
I use Vimeo a lot because I like their controls. That was one of the first things I liked about Vimeo. It was their player as well. Their player is just gigantic, and it had higher quality than any of the other stuff early on. But a lot of the other big guys have gotten on board with HD video.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many features that Vimeo had first that everyone else trickled down to get. So I don't really quite get Pinterest much at all. It's just like, I don't need to do this. Because I blog, so I guess I'm so old, and I'm like, oh, I'll just put this on my blog, or I'll tweet out a link. I don't need to put it on a board.
I have been trying my hardest to use Pinterest regularly and to figure out, you know, what's going to be my thing. Because, I think I'm just Sarah. I don't know if I'm actually Sarah Lane on Pinterest. There might already be another Sarah Lane. Let's see. Well, as I'm pulling it up, I've been trying to figure out, okay, how is Pinterest going to work for me? Because I can't just ignore it. Yeah, especially for something like The Social Hour. We got to be using, Sarah Lane Thompson. That's not me. I don't even know who I am on Pinterest. Sarah Lane something. I'll figure it out eventually. But I figured, you know, there are a lot of things that I see that I am, like, adding to Instapaper, which is sort of like my little bookmarking way that I go about doing things. And a lot of those end up being recipes because in my free time, I'm an amateur. I'm not even an amateur chef because I'm not even that good yet. But I'm an amateur dinner maker. So I'm constantly looking at recipes on the internet and wanting to bookmark them. And I decided, well, instead of just saving them to Instapaper so that I can find them later, why not save them to Pinterest where I can find them later, but I can also share with anybody else who's going to find my page and say, oh, yeah, that looks like a really cool spaghetti sauce recipe. Thanks, Sarah. Because I'm already saving them. I might as well share, too.
I was tempted to pin something the other day. Like, I have the bookmarklet and was like, this is a really cool image. I want to save it for later for myself. And then it's like, do I do it? Maybe.
Yeah. Oh, Sarah Lynn rocks. That's my Pinterest. I didn't remember. I do that sometimes. Yeah, so on my page, I just wasn't able to share all that much. So yeah, and now I've got this new thing that I'm going to start doing. It's recipes. Maybe my whole page will become recipes eventually. But for now, that's something that's like a little niche. This is what I'm doing online fairly regularly. So I might as well share it on Pinterest. Sorry, my computer's extremely slow. But I've got a little vegan, I don't know, chickpea thing that looked good. And then like a homemade spaghetti sauce thing that looked good. So that makes sense to me. And maybe I'll find some how-to recipes that somebody posted via video to Vimeo. And I can post those on my Pinterest page too, so I can find them more easily. But just another way that Pinterest is taking over the world. And there's nothing we can do to stop it. All right, meme of the week. Texts from Hillary was up, and now it's over. And did you even know what text from Hillary was?
Yeah, actually, I did. It's on Reddit. Reddit was populating this everywhere. So I've seen it's just like a picture of Hillary Clinton with her BlackBerry or whatever phone she has, and it's just a funny caption with whatever she's responding back in a text.
So this is it was a parody site, right? A parody site on Tumblr of Hillary having fictitious conversations with people. There was a really good image of her, you know, she's, you know, on Air Force One or wherever she is, wearing dark glasses indoors on her cell phone, and it was just kind of a badass picture, and it made the rounds on the internet, and this is one of these pictures that it's fun to create a meme out of. So this is Hillary talking to all sorts of folks. Now, if you scroll down a bit, you'll see that she's talking to Obama and Biden, new Justin Bieber video, and then, you know, here's Hillary's response. So you get it. It's kind of funny just because she looks, you know, sort of angry, and here are all these people that are texting Hillary, and she's kind of got little snarky responses back. Well, it turns out that the two guys who put together Texts from Hillary, which is textsfromhillaryclinton.tumblr.com for anybody who's interested in going and checking it out, she found out about this site. And instead of, getting annoyed or asking them to shut it down or something like that, she had a sense of humor and sent them a little autographed, "Hey, thanks for making this funny site, Hillary."
Well, that's a good thing she's got a sense of humor. I mean, she's kind of important, you know?
Yeah, but she's kind of a big deal.
It's not like this thing's going to end up dying, though, just because the site's going away. Or they're not updating it. It just seems like a meme that would continue anyway, right? Just put one image next to another image and just write text on it. It's just a meme that probably, even though it's dead for now, I'm sure it'll be back on Reddit, like, next week.
Yeah, exactly. All right, quick reminder, before we wrap up this show, because we're getting to the point where we're going to go back to live NAB coverage, want to hear from you. The Social Hour at twit.tv is our email address. Our voicemail is 2626-SOCIAL. You just type those letters into a phone, and then numbers come out, and then you find our Google Voice number, and you can send us a voicemail. Or you can always record a video, upload it, and send us the email to where it's living on Vimeo or YouTube or something like that. Don't send us video attachments because we won't open them. Finally, Rad or Fad, there is, you know that comic,
XKCD.
XKCD, yep. Had a funny little comic today. It's funny because it's true that the word Tumblr has been searched for so much that if the trend continues as it has, by about October of this year, more people will be searching for the word Tumblr, that's T-U-M-B-L-R, like the service, than the word blog itself. Or at least the streams will cross.
Yeah, that sounds about right, because every time I say the word blog, it sounds less and less used. Like, I blog still. I write that down as somewhere on my Google Plus page, my profile, because it's such an unusual thing at this point, because Tumblr's way more social than just writing, you know, this into a blog. You can follow people and everything. So the word blog's almost dead.
Almost. Yeah, but it's funny because you look at that graph and it's like, well, there are a lot of people using WordPress, but there's not that verbiage, you know, I'm going to go WordPress this. You know, but there's a lot more. First of all, Tumblr just has a lot of users. They're you know, they've been growing really, really steadily
and it is a blog.
For a long time. That's but it is a blog.
It's
it started out as more of like a micro blog alternative, but you can use a Tumblr blog any way you want for long form, short form, whatever. But people tend to say, you know, I'm gonna Tumblr or go visit my Tumblr rather than my blog.
I still call it a Tumblog. That was the word, right? That's what I used to call it.
Yeah, I still have my, well, that's another story. My domain is posting to my, I have a subdomain that's tumblelog.saralane.com, and that's my Tumblr. But yeah, I'm with you. It's interesting that Tumblr will replace the word blog for a lot of people who think of blogging, not for everybody, but for a lot of people. By October, it will be the most popular word associated with the idea of blogging, or so says XKCD. They have great little comics all the time. All right, so that's actually what I'm going to call this week's Rad or Fad. In Amber's absence, I decided, if you think it is rad that Tumblr is overtaking the word blog, let us know. Or do you think that Tumblr is just yet another blog-type fad, and in a couple years it'll be something else? Let us know about that, too. What do you think?
I think it's a fad.
You do?
Yeah, because, I mean, Tumblr was popular before. It's still getting pretty popular. But I'm just going to the site still. It still has that Web 2.0, you know, missing I'm forgetting the thing. Vowel. I can think of the word vowel. It's missing an E, right? Because it's Tumblr with no E.
Right.
I'm like, okay, this is kind of dated. Even Flickr, they own Flickr with an E.
Right.
I'm like, I think this is going to go away. I couldn't remember the word vowel. That's great. I'm like, what's the opposite of consonant in my head? And I couldn't do it.
Well, how often do you have to say the word, you know?
I know.
It doesn't come up in conversation that much, especially because they've been stripped out of our online experience. But you're right. The whole vowel thing is like, it's back in vogue now. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a vowel-less... Well, they do have the U, but if you're missing the E, I mean, you're very web too, and that's like so over. All right. With all of that, we've come to the end of our hour, I think exactly. So thank you so much, Ayaz, for filling in this week. It was really fun.
Yeah, no problem until the point where I couldn't remember the word vowel.
Yeah, it happens to the best of us. I forget words all the time. And thanks to everybody for watching this episode. Amber's going to be back next week. And a reminder that we're live on Mondays, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. For anybody who wants to watch us live, thank you so much. We love the live viewers, watching everybody in chat. Love the support. But if you can't catch us live, you can always watch us after the fact. We're on demand for you. Find us on iTunes. Find us on our website, twitch.tv/TSH. We're posting all over the place. Google Plus and Facebook and Twitter and, Pinterest too. Why not? I'm Sarah Lane. He's Ayaz Akhtar. And we'll see you next week on The Social Hour. Bye, everybody.